kingdom in a mixed up world. You're in the sweet spot, baby. You're in the sweet spot, girl. You're in the sweet spot, darling. It's a magical kingdom in a mixed up world.
Welcome to the Sweep Spot Podcast. My name is Lynn, your host, and Ken's my co-host. Ken, how's it going?
Oh, Lynn, it is going, it is going. I'm so happy to be here for this episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
Episode 381.
381? That's amazing, Lynn. I can't believe it.
I know. We are both former Disneyland Studio cast members, and we talk Disneyland. We are also the hosts of the number one Disneyland podcast, hosted by two former Disneyland Studio cast members.
Number one.
And we're also authors of the books Cleaning the Kingdom. We have two different books under the same title, two different subtitles, and different content in each book. And you can get those books signed. Well, you can get the second book signed by both of us at our website, thesweepspot.com, or you can get both books not signed at Amazon, and that's in paperback. You can also get the books in digital format on Kindle and wherever digital books are found, and audio, wherever the audio books are found, Audible and whatnot.
And those are the best-selling books ever written about the world-famous Disneyland custodial team.
Number one.
Number one. That's right.
Also, if you'd like to help support our show, become a Patreon. You get some cool perks. We first one is that once a month, you will get a bonus episode delivered to you that we record specifically for the Patreons. And then you also get to join us on our current events live. We do once a month where you get to be in the chat room as we're recording our current events episode. And you get to chime in with some comments, and we'll try to incorporate those when is appropriate. So you can do that by going to thesweepspot.com or patreon.com and search The Sweep Spot. Also, something new, we're also going to be at the D23 Ultimate Disney event this August 9th, 10th, and 11th. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we will be not at our own booth like we had in the past, but we will be at a booth for a few hours each day. And we will, as we get closer, we'll announce, you know, what the hours will be for each day. But we will be there selling our books and saying hi to people if you'd like. And we will also be roaming around the convention center, causing chaos. No, they're enjoying the floor. Enjoying the floor. And yeah, we will be there. So more info to come on that. But Ken, who is our guest tonight?
Lynn, we have Debbie Handy, who was a cast member at Disneyland in the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. She had several different roles, and I think people are really going to like the story she has to tell. It's a great peek into what cast life was like in those days.
For sure. I'm excited to get talking to her, so let's get right into that. Looking to go to Disneyland Resort in California, Walt Disney World Resort in Florida, Aulani in Hawaii, or on a Disney cruise, or Adventures by Disney Vacation, I am here to help you book the best vacation possible, and my expertise and services won't cost you anything extra. Disney pays me, not you. As a perk by booking a package with me, I can also book your dining reservations, park reservations, tours, shuttles, and more. Let me do the hard work while you get excited about your upcoming Disney vacation. I can also book Universal Studios trips as well. By booking with me this year, you will receive 3 months free of our Patreon perk, like our bonus episodes, and join in on our current events live. So contact me at L Barron, that's L-B-A-R-R-O-N, con at concierge.com. That's concierge.com. Or thesweepspot at gmail.com. So, Debbie, did you grow up going to Disneyland as a child, or was it later in life you discovered Disneyland?
No, I actually grew up in Anaheim, not far off of Ball Road. So it was sort of my backyard. We didn't actually go a ton. I remember a few times. One time, in fact, my dad drove a Greyhound bus, which he was the driver of, to the curb to come pick us up to take us with the whole crew on the bus. My mom wasn't thrilled about that because he didn't tell her he was doing that. But anyway, so I do remember that trip. And when I was little, I remember just all the walking involved. But I don't feel like we went super frequently.
Right. And I you know, we grew up in Southern California also. And it wasn't something until later when they started offering like the annual passes. It was more of just a maybe an annual thing for me growing up. So it wasn't anything like nowadays where, you know.
Yeah. I certainly didn't go. I didn't go every year, I'm sure. Maybe a handful of times before I was a teenager.
Right. Well, what led you to apply at Disneyland?
I was going to Loera High School, which is just down the road. And a lot of our band members applied to be in the parades. So my boyfriend at the time applied as a dancer, actually tried out, and he convinced me to go and try out too. Oh. But I was a miserable failure at dancing. So he made it and I didn't. So he was in Fantasy on Parade as the Dodo Bird. That was December of 74.
Okay.
So I went back to try out as a float driver, but by then Fantasy on Parade had already been cast. So I actually made the audition for float driver for Americon Parade. And that's how I started. That's where I started, was for that parade. And so we started I hired in November of 74. So it was all set up even before Fantasy on Parade got going. And we started shortly after the beginning of the year with rehearsals, because the first parade, American Parade, I believe, started in May of 75.
Oh, right. Okay.
Is that right? May of 75?
It sounds about right. Yeah. Because America Sings opened before the whole celebration in 74. So that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Wow. So a float driver is what your first role was.
Yeah, it was really interesting. All the floats have a drive unit on them, and depending on the size of the float and the shape of the float, the drive unit could be in the front or the middle or the back. And when we auditioned, they had a drive unit in the middle, and then they had a big, big piece of plywood as the rest of the float with casters on the four corners. So when you turned it, it really almost rotated.
Right.
And they put us through a path of cones, which included a hairpin turn. And so people were making the mistake of driving it like a car, and the back corner would just wipe out the outside cones.
Oh, right.
Anyway, I sat and watched while I was in line waiting, and watched the mistakes that other people were making so I wouldn't make the same ones.
Right.
And so when you know, so many of the floats are different. Sometimes you stand, sometimes you sit. I had one, my favorite float, I actually drove laying down on a pull-up board on my stomach.
Which one was that?
That was the Discovery ship. It was the second float.
Yeah. Okay. I'm familiar with that.
So my face looked out the bow portholes. Uh-huh. There were two little screened portholes there, and that's where my head was, right up in that corner. And then my body was on this pull-up board, and underneath the pull-up board was handlebars, and there was a throttle on the right hand. And to operate the brake was with my foot, but I was short, so I would have to slide down that pull-up board until I could reach the brake. Wow. I was about a foot too short.
Right.
But I really liked that one. But that one, you know, my face was in the bow, and the mass of the float was behind me. So it was challenging going through gates and parking and things like that. And then there's other floats that spin, like the little teacups, you know, they call them whirly birds. You just sit inside this little teeny tiny float, and it operates sort of like a helicopter. You push the steering wheel forward and it goes forward, pull it back, it goes backward. And then if you just put it in neutral and turn the wheel, it spins.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
So there's a lot of those in floats. There was a jar of mustard. There was teapots.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, those are kind of fun to drive. You can really interact with the audience with those.
So they pretty much, you didn't have any prior experience except for, you know, driving a car, but they just trained you for that.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't remember we as drivers didn't have to practice a whole lot. It was the dancers that had to practice. So we got our practice in on a mock parade route in the back area with the dancers and the music, where they were getting their dance practice, and we got, you know, a little bit of driving, but I think most of it happened like dress rehearsals on the parade route, where we actually got to be in the park. I don't remember doing that a lot, but we obviously had to wait till the park closed to do that.
Right. Wow.
So I don't remember how often we did that, but it was cool going down the parade route with nobody there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
The number one rule was just don't run over people, correct?
There were lots of mishaps, but not too many people got hit. There were other types of mishaps. Floats would break down. I had one, it was actually in the next Fantasy on Parade. I was driving a drum, and the cable on the battery had come loose and got underneath the wheel of the float, and it was pinned between the railroad track and the metal wheel of the truck, the float, and it was smoking or sparking. And we had fire extinguishers inside, but darned if I was going to put it out. I just went out the top. it was a drum, and it was during the parade route and everything, but I thought, I am not staying in here. This is going to blow. Bailed out. And I had another float. It was the only time I had ever driven a float where the driver was in costume.
Oh.
It was Scrooge McDuck, and it was a mini bike with a sidecar. And so I got to drive this mini bike in costume, and I got to the bottom of Matterhorn Way between Alice and the Matterhorn, and it stalled. And I had... this was a one-time thing. I didn't have any prior experience driving this. And I was just subbing for somebody and pushing it. Now I had to go uphill, and I was in costume. And thankfully there's parade supervisors along the route, and somebody helped me. I think they might've got it restarted. I don't remember. I just remember being stuck and thinking, okay, I'm in character. What would Scrooge McDuck do?
Yeah.
And I don't even remember how it worked out, but there's mishaps like that that happened, but I actually don't remember any floats hitting people.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Scrooge would pay for something that works better.
Yeah. I think there's a reason why I didn't get asked to do that one again. I also had got one chance to drive Herbie, the little Volkswagen Bug. Oh. And that one, you drive from the back seat. Because it's supposed to look like there's no driver.
Right, right.
So the back windows are blacked out and you drive from the back and you have levers to open the side doors and the hood opens and a tongue comes out. Oh. But it's all choreographed with a policeman on the outside. And I was, again, just subbing and I didn't know what the routine was. And I think I hurt the guy a couple times because I throw open the door and he's supposed to fake falling down, but I didn't know the timing, and that was another one I only did once. But that wasn't American Parade. That was the parade after. American Parade, we were sort of assigned floats, right, and we kind of stuck with them for a while, but then we would get bored and asked to switch, and most of the time we got permission, and occasionally we did it on the sly.
Did American Parade do two parades a day?
They did, except this was during the time when some days they closed at 6, and that was it. And so we would do one parade, and then we would have to, we always worked a split shift. We would have to come back after the park closed to bring the floats back.
Right.
Because we parked them by the admin buildings behind Main Street. So if we didn't have two parades, we had to come back anyway to bring the floats back.
So you said, what was the parade after that?
There was a fantasy on parade at Christmas of 76.
Okay.
So American Parade ended in September of 76. And then I believe there was a fantasy on parade that Christmas.
Okay. That makes sense.
But I actually wasn't on staff for that parade. So when I just subbed a couple times. When American Parade ended in September, those of us that stayed on were just in the quote unquote entertainment division. And we just got to do, just fun stuff like grad nights. We were gophers for the bands on all the different stages. So
yeah,
that was one year the Miracles were there. The Four Tops were on a stage at Small World. The Miracles were on Main Street on a stage. And so one of my fun things was I had to get a cup of coffee for one of the spotlight guys on the top right over the, is it called the Mad Hatter on Main Street on the bank side?
Yeah, by so, Mr. Lincoln. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he was up there and I volunteered to take him this coffee and it didn't have a lid. And I was climbing up a ladder that was on the side of the building.
Oh.
With a cup of coffee in my hand.
Oh, no.
That was fun. So we got to do some really odd things. I'm not even sure why they kept us on, to be honest, because we were just sort of thrown out there to do whatever they asked us to do. And so that was when American Parade ended in September. I stayed in entertainment until I was hired in the park in foods in 77.
Oh,
I think it was right before Space Mountain opened, April of 77. So there was that time between American Parade and Space Mountain opening that I was just this gopher in the entertainment division. And this was my junior and senior year in high school.
Oh, okay.
And then in 77, I had just started college. So working at Disneyland got me through high school, college, and my first couple years of teaching.
Oh, nice.
the whole span. So I started in foods after I graduated high school.
Oh, okay.
And what was it like? You mentioned Space Mountain. So you were there when that was being built and they're prepping that to open. What was that like?
it was pretty cool to be part of that. And we got to be on the nights when they just needed bodies to test it out. And they'd already done sandbags and probably, I don't know, other people in front of just us. But mm-hmm. we got to ride, we got to go in on certain nights and just ride it, which was kind of fun. And I remember vividly just the smells of everything being new. You know, like the smell of new carpet nowadays mm-hmm. Makes yeah. me think of the opening of Space Mountain and Space Place and that whole section over there. It all just smelled so new.
Well, that's right.
Fresh Imagineering, I call it. Yeah, it's often the smell of paint and concrete and that sort of thing. But so was there like a clamor for the foods people to work Space Place or what was going on?
I think, you know, entertainment and in the park are two separate things, at least they were then. And so because I wanted something more permanent part-time rather than seasonal like parades, that was all they offered me. And I imagined they had openings because of Space Place. I don't know that there were people trying to get over there who were already in foods. I just feel like there were definitely just more openings. And so that's where they put me. But really, after the first summer of Space Place being open, then they trained me on Coke Terrace because Space Place was frequently just closed. The ride, Space Mountain was open, but it was tucked way back there in a corner and it was never yeah. very crowded. So it wasn't unusual on those low attendance days. You know, sometimes we didn't reach 10,000.
Yeah.
And so on those kinds of days, Space Place was closed and they just put us over at Cook Terrace.
That makes sense because there was that stage there, that outdoor stage. And if there was yeah. nothing going on there, then I could see, yeah.
People didn't know how to find Space Place. Mm-hmm. It was just way back there. If they got in line for the ride, they never had to pass Space Place. And when you got off the ride, generally, you just head off to another ride and it didn't dump you out over by Space Place. So I just think that it people just didn't know it was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of solved that problem by turning the old Mission to Mars building into the restaurant. You know, it's Pizza Planet now.
It was
Pizza Port when it opened with the new Tomorrowland of 1988. But yeah, that solved that issue because it was highly visible then, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It did have, Space Place did have an employee window, which was nice because Coke Terrace didn't have that.
That was great. I got to experience that a little bit in my early days of working there before it was closed for good.
That was kind of fun because we got to see some of the other people that we worked with would come over there. And the bands like Papa Do Run Run played at that stage a lot. And we kind of got to know them because they would come over to the employee window. And I don't think we charged them anything. I think that was just convenient for them to come over there. It was behind the scenes and they could sit and have a little break. So that I remember the bass player liked iced tea. And that, by the way, working at Space Place and Coke Terrace, this was when the cash registers didn't total up the orders. So people would say 3 hamburgers and we were writing it by hand, mm-hmm. a 3 next to the hamburger, and they were like $1.85. So you had to do the math for what 3 times $1.85 is. And they would order 2 fries, 3 Diet Coke, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And we had to add that all up and put the total into the cash register. They didn't add it up for us.
Oh.
So some orders were crazy. And then, of course, you'd get it all totaled up and they'd go, oh, and I forgot, do you have dessert? And it's like, okay, what else are you adding? I've already totaled it. So it could be a lengthy process. I mean, there's some combinations you just learn, you know, a hamburger, fries, and a soda. You just kind of learn what that was after a while. But that wasn't easy. And then it didn't count back the change for you. So it was, you know, $19 and they gave you 25 or whatever. Mm-hmm. You had to count it all back. It's not like the registers now just tells people how much change to give.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. if they're even ordering like that now, they just, you know, people order through apps and things like
that. Yeah. Well, they would stand in that line under that neon menu over their head, and they would stand mm-hmm. there for, I don't know how long, 15, 20 minutes. They'd get to the front and they would go, "Do you have hamburgers?" Really? You haven't looked up yet?
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's funny.
Worked a couple grad nights there because Space Place opened right during that time of the end of the year. So there were a lot of grad nights that I worked at Space Place and Coke Terrace. And that's where I developed my coffee habit because we were working all night.
Right.
And so that was interesting to work those. I actually worked grad nights in entertainment too, which was a whole different thing. I worked a couple New Year's Eves in entertainment, and then also later in rides. But working all night at the restaurant is when I started drinking coffee.
Yeah, don't blame you. Wow.
Yeah, the most important machine in the custodial central was the coffee maker, because we had a built-in third shift. There was, you know, night custodial, so it was, you know, 24/7 operation. We also had, you know, sometimes as hourlies, but I would say even more so for the managers. They would often, you know, sometimes they might come in one day with an opening shift, and then another day with the swing shift. And so, yeah, coffee was essential.
Yeah, I actually, my high school boyfriend worked in custodial, the graveyard shift. So he was one polishing the poles on the carousel. I remember him talking about the bathroom area in town square, polishing the brass, brass pieces on the doors, you know, just talking about all that stuff and hosing things down. So he had the midnight to 8:30 shift.
So you did restaurants, and what a neat time to, like you had mentioned with Space Mountain opening, and how long did you stay there?
It was just a year, and it really was. When I transferred into the park, foods wasn't my goal. I wanted to do attractions, but they didn't have any openings. So all I was doing was working until I could transfer. So that happened in about a year. So in 78, I was able to transfer into Fantasyland attractions. And that was when, and I listened to Dory when you guys interviewed Dory, and she talked a lot about Storybook Land. I also started on Storybook Land. That seems like that's where everybody started. It was a big crew. It was women only. We had to memorize that 7-minute spiel and then do it twice, and then bump to another boat, do it twice, go on a break. That was really different from Foods, because in Foods, on an 8-hour shift, you got one lunch and two breaks. And you're on your feet the whole time. In attractions, sometimes we would get a break every half hour. It just depended on the size of the crew that day, how many positions there were to work, because sometimes you could drop down to one position, then you'd have an extra person. Or somebody would come on a half an hour after you started, and they would start that bumping process, and the person on the end would go on a break. So I was like, wow, you get a lot of breaks in attractions. It was nice. And it always continued like that the whole time I was there. I did it for 5 years, and it was always a nice place to be if you were looking for breaks.
Yeah, that I would think Storybook Land would be a frequent place somebody would end up, because if you think about it, I mean, you needed several people at least to staff that.
Absolutely.
And many of the other attractions, you might have one person there, you
correct
know, one person can run teacups or whatever, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you probably at any, even on a slow night, you probably have a couple of boats out, so there's, you know, two or three people right there. You've got to have somebody on the dock. So you're going to have a minimum of 3 or 4 people on any night on Storybook. And then if it's slow, you're just standing around. That's when they would offer somebody to go home early. But I started on Storybook and got trained on Toad, teacups, motorboats, actually all of the rides. Peter Pan, mm-hmm. Carousel, Snow White, Pinocchio wasn't there, Casey Jr. My favorite, I don't know why, I absolutely loved Mr. Toad.
Oh.
And I picked that for my summer ride a couple of times. And we always had really nice summer crews. And then because you're working with the same people all the time, you really develop a bond and go out after work. And those were fun. The summers were more fun because during the rest of the year, you might not see the same people for weeks. You know, I was going to college. And so I would work Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. And I didn't, you know, depending on what ride I'm in, I might not see the same people. But motorboats was another one I picked for summer. One time on motorboats, we were trying to get a picture of the crew, mm-hmm. the summer crew. And we got somebody to be the photographer. And we had this idea that we would all go out in a boat. And when we got almost back to the dock in the rapids, we would each jump out on a rock. And then the photographer could take our picture, like we're stranded out there, and he could jump back in the boat and come around and pick us up. Uh-oh. So it's a great picture. I have the picture. And we're all standing there looking confused, like, oh no, what do we do? He forgot that he had to get back in the boat. And he just let the boat go around.
Oh, no.
So now it's idling, and it's a long ride if you're stepping on the gas.
Yeah.
And we have to open at whatever time that morning, 8 o'clock in the morning. And we're all stranded out on the rocks and hoping that none of our supervisors walk by and we're not open yet or whatever. And we had to wait for that darn boat to go all the way. It had to take 20 minutes.
Oh.
It was a really long time, but we did get a cute picture out of it.
Oh, that's neat.
And if there's anyone listening who's like, where is that? It's a former attraction, and it's I guess Idlewise Snacks or whatever. Lynn, is that what it's called? It's right there. It's north of the Matterhorn on your way towards It's a Small World. It's, you know, the monorail. The monorail goes right over it. That little water area used to be the motorboat cruise. The parade viewing area is kind of encroached on it a little bit, but yeah.
Wow. It was a nice summer ride because it was out, like, in the rest of Fantasyland, if you think of where the carousel and where teacups used to be, it was always jam-packed with people. But motorboats was kind of on the edge and quieter. I mean, there was a line, but you just weren't in all the hustle bustle of the rest of Fantasyland. So I kind of liked that. And I don't know, maybe just in my mind, it felt cooler because you had water there.
Oh, true. Yeah.
And then I did learn Matterhorn, but I think because Fantasyland closed in 81 to be refurbished, mm-hmm. I think it was 81. And so there were a lot of rides that most of the rides were just closed. And so they had to do something with us. So I learned Matterhorn, but it was very intimidating to me. It was the last one I learned. And I was always so petrified that I was going to be up in the booth mm-hmm. when the ride went down. And then you have... And I'm sure somebody would have stepped in to do it for me, but you have to be navigating, you know, sometimes people had to run up, employees had to run up the mountain and release each sled by hand. So mm-hmm. they would run up to the first break area and call the booth, and the booth would have to press a button, and the person there would have to push a button to let that sled go down, and then those people would go up to the next break area, and they would have to release each sled one at a time. And I thought, oh my God, I don't have any idea how I would do up in the booth with that. I never got the experience, and I'm not sorry about that. I was very nervous. And the other thing on Matterhorn is if somebody's slow loading or if they can't find their seatbelt or something, you mm-hmm. have to pull that sled off.
Oh, right.
You have to, I don't remember what that's called when the track slides over mm-hmm. and it takes a sled off, because if you don't do that, the other sleds will back up and you'll cause the ride to shut down. So I was always a little nervous about that too. Matterhorn was never something I mastered. The other rides I could work in my sleep, but yeah. not that one. In fact, Casey Jr., that one, you had a spiel button you had to push at certain landmarks, like, you know, that first pine tree, the bridge, and you had to push the spiel to go. And I was in college and working, it was probably like a Friday night private party, hardly anybody there. And I was having to read All Quiet on the Western Front for my Western Civ class. And I was reading and driving the train and hitting that button when I needed to hit it, because I'd just have to glance up and go, yep, right now. And then I'd go back to my book. Yep, right now. And I probably read a couple chapters that way. Certainly didn't read the whole book, but I didn't have to pay too much attention on that ride. I knew all the right places to push that button.
Right. Wow. And that was when Skyway was over there too. Did you ever?
It was. Well, Skyway at the time was men only, but we did have a Fantasyland attraction hostess challenge that. And she wanted to know why she couldn't work it. And they said, because she wouldn't be able to throw the buckets, because you have to push them after you've let the people out. And she said, well, what if I can? And so she pushed it enough that they let her try it. And I took pictures of it. And I was a photographer, so I had my camera all the time. I mean, not while I was working an attraction, but I brought it to work a lot.
Right.
So she, I think her name was Sherry Connolly. So she did a darn good job. And they certainly, I thought the story ended with them letting her work there. But somebody else who was around that time said, no, they never did let her. It never happened. Mm. They never let women work it, is what I was told. But I do remember that she was successful doing it. And she felt very proud of the fact that she challenged that she was able to throw those buckets. But they never did let women work it. She was a softball player. Disneyland had softball leagues then. I don't know if they still do. And she was our shortstop. She was quite the athlete. So it doesn't surprise me that she could throw those buckets around.
Right.
And, you know, our team was the Operator Errors was the name of our softball team. And we had shirts like the Astros. I remember that.
And this was during the ticket books.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were Magic Key tickets also. Mm-hmm. And I think the day passes had come in where they had to show it. So you could buy an all day, some kind of all day pass, a passport, and you could show that and it got you on every ride. But we were still also taking tickets.
Right.
Does that sound right? Do you remember it that way?
It does. Yeah. I mean, from what I remember, they went away. I was probably, I don't know, in elementary school, sixth, seventh grade. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember. I can't remember when the new Fantasyland opened up if we were still taking tickets. Hmm. I can't remember, because I can picture working on Mr. Toad and there was a person who took the ticket and loaded, and then the person at the panel. And I can't remember ever taking tickets and working the panel at the same time, because where would you put the tickets?
Right.
I don't remember that. But anyway. At some point I know they were phased out, and I remember when those Magic Key tickets came in, or passports.
So when you said you picked Mr. Toad for summer, how many positions were there at Toad then?
Well, it was always paired with it was usually teacups and Toad. So you could have two people at Toad and two people at teacups, and then one person to break. So that's how you're bumping. Somebody's on break. They come back. They come to Toad and they take the loading position. The loader goes to the panel. The person on the panel goes to teacups. Mm-hmm. and works loading, and the person loading goes in the booth. And then when the bump comes through, the person in the booth on teacups goes and takes a break. So if you only have three people, right, you're getting a break every 45 minutes. If you only have two people, if it's a quiet night and you have one on tote and one on teacups and one to break, you're getting a break every half an hour.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. It would happen. It really did happen on those quiet nights. And I would actually look, the schedules that were posted had the estimated attendance at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So if there was a 13, that meant we're expecting 13,000. And so you could kind of tell if it was going to be a quiet night or not just by looking at the schedule.
If people that didn't go to the parks in the 80s, even parts of the 90s, that don't understand a slow night, because nowadays it's just always
never
busy.
Slow. Yeah. Right. No, there were, and there were Disney employee nights in December that would have like an open house, which was another quiet night because it was just the employees and their families. And walking around, you could see all kinds of people that you knew because there weren't that many people around. And well, also they're all your friends and employees, but that was another one of those quiet nights. It was probably under 10,000.
Was that part of the Christmas party?
It was always the first week of December.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Yeah.
Is that what they called it, Christmas? Okay.
It was the Disney family holiday party or Disney family.
Yeah, and they had like hot dogs for 5 cents.
Yeah.
Sodas for 5 cents. All the food was really cheap and rides were operated by supervisors and people that don't normally operate them. Those were fun nights.
Different management then too. You know,
yeah, and I don't know what it was like after that. I left in 83, so
okay.
I don't know what it was like after that.
Did you ever see any celebrities?
I only saw one that I know of, and I, you know, I'll be honest, I was not keyed into that. Yeah. And you know, I was 16, 17, 18. I saw Anson Williams on teacups one time.
Posse.
It wasn't anything remarkable. He rode the ride and he got off. And I imagine there were probably lots of times when I missed it because I just wasn't paying attention. I don't know. I heard people talking about seeing people, but I don't even remember who.
Yeah.
You know, working there, we probably have done things, you know, you probably sold food to, you probably loaded somebody.
Right.
We probably gave directions to the restrooms to somebody who later became famous.
Right.
But at the time, we, you know, they weren't famous. So we didn't, you know, it's not like we're like, oh, I met so-and-so, you know, they're just like thousands of other people you deal with every day, you know?
Yeah.
And I think fame, there's so many different kinds of media for them to be out on now, and with social media, that I just wasn't as aware. If I didn't see the movie or didn't see it in a newspaper, you know, I just didn't have that much of an awareness about some of the stars, I think.
So you mainly worked in Fantasyland, Tomorrowland while you were there. Were you there for do you remember the opening of Big Thunder Mountain?
I don't remember the opening of it. I don't remember going to that. What year was that?
79.
September of 1979.
Yeah.
I have no memory.
You were on the other side
of
the park, so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure because we did go to the park a lot more when I worked there, because it was free.
right.
And I was of the age to enjoy it and bring my friends or whatever. So I'm sure that I went on it shortly after it opened just to try it out. But I wasn't part of any of that for sure. I didn't get to ride it in front of the opening or anything like that.
And that was before, you know, back to Fantasyland, that was before Toontown. So Small World was pretty much on its own over there in the...
It was a dead end. Yeah. Yes, and it was very quiet over there. I did work Small World too. In fact, one of the One of the two times I chased somebody happened on Snow White, on Small World. It was, it might've been a grad night. No, it was not. On grad nights, we put positions inside the rides because of all the tomfoolery that went on.
Oh.
And for some reason, this was not a grad night. I don't think. Anyway, we had a position inside the ride. There are lots of catwalks inside, and they're black. So they're kind of easily disguised. So the boat's going along in a canal, and every once in a while, it will come to a catwalk. And shortly around that catwalk is a black curtain, and on the other side of the black curtain is a phone. And so we would be positioned behind that black curtain, and I was on that position, and a boat was coming, and I saw a lighter go on. And I thought somebody lit up a cigarette. Mm-hmm. Again, I couldn't have been more than 18, 19. I came out from behind the curtain as the boat went by, and the back seat was empty. Mm-hmm. And the person with the lighter was in the next seat forward. So I stepped into the boat and I reached over. He had a bong. And I reached over his shoulder, grabbed the bong, and stepped back out of the boat about where the catwalk ended. So there wasn't anything he could do about it. The boat had gone past
the end of the
catwalk. So I just went behind the black curtain, called security, said, meet me at the end. My heart was just pounding.
Yeah.
And then I had to meet him out there to show him who it was, because there wasn't any way they could ID them. So I had to get out of the ride quickly and meet him. And then, of course, security met him, and he got exited out of the park. So that was one time. And then I did chase a couple of kids from Mr. Toad. Mm-hmm. I was training somebody on the panel, and I was in the load position, and a car came out empty, and we didn't send any empty cars. So I knew somebody was out inside the ride, and I told the trainee to hit the emergency stop button, right, and turn the lights up. And instead, he didn't do any of that. Oh, no, he turned the lights up, but he did not hit the stop. He got on the mic and he said, everybody remain seated, please. Well, he turned the lights on for them, so now they could really run out. So when those kids in, there were two young boys, they bolted out the doors, and I just took off running after them, and they ran past the carousel and through the castle and across the moat and around the hub. One went to Adventureland, and the other one ran into a dead end at Coat Corner. Mm. Or is it Coat Corner, Carnation, whatever is over there on the right, ran into a dead end where it's just bathrooms there.
Yeah.
And we're huffing and puffing. My knee socks are around my ankles. And a guest said to me, do you need help? And I said, can you watch this young man while I call security? He said, what did he do? And I said, he got out inside of a ride, and that man just reamed that kid.
Oh, good.
Well, so that kid got exited out, and I don't know, you know, his friend would have never known what happens. As long before cell phones, the friend would never have known what happened to his buddy. He's just left in the park by himself.
Oh.
I running as hard as I could after that kid.
And that wasn't even, that was a grad night, or?
That was not a grad night.
Oh, okay.
No, I was in Snow White on a grad night. And back when the apple, the witch held out that fluorescent apple, and her arm would reach out and people would grab the apple. So we just had a bucket full of apples to just replace it. And I guess it got so bad that her hand would get broken off because they'd miss and grab her hand, that they finally made it a hologram.
Yeah.
But I actually have one of the apples.
Oh, neat.
And it's almost pink. It's got that fluorescent red color on it.
Right.
Yeah, every ride had an inside position on those nights because they were so crazy.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. So how long, you said you left in 83?
I left in August of 83. I was teaching by then. Mm-hmm. And so I was teaching Monday through Friday and working Disneyland Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I had enough.
Yeah.
And my husband had gotten a teaching job by then out of the area. So we just left the area and went up the coast of California.
Oh, okay. Do you get to go back to the park?
Don't go back. I've taken grandkids there a time or two. Actually, in the first 5 years, we went back a lot because we still had all of our ties down there, all of our friends. And I ended up, I was married. And when we left, I was just newly pregnant with our first son. And so when he was born, I took him to Disneyland to show all my friends because they were all still working there. So we did take them when they were little. So that was, you know, mid 80s to 90s. Mm-hmm. But we haven't gone back too many times since then. I went maybe 5 years ago with my grandkids. It's really different using those apps and not just bolting in and going, okay, let's run here and let's run there.
I know.
It's complicated now.
It really is.
And coming from out of the area, I think we went 2 days in the park and spent 3 nights because for us, it's quite a drive to get there. You know, right. we dropped like $3,000 to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Easily.
So, yeah, I can almost go to Hawaii. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, great. Is there anything else that we maybe didn't cover or ask you that you were hoping to mention?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
It was a great job. It was my very first job. I learned a lot about how to be an employee, especially in the foods department. You were never allowed to be idle. If there was no guest at your window, you were doing something else. And it really, my work ethic, I really feel like it was established back then. And even in rides, you know, the way that you had to clock in, but you had to be in costume at your ride at your start time. Mm-hmm. And they didn't tolerate being late and no shows. So I really feel like all of those things made me a better employee for the rest of my life. It was good training.
Yeah, I think Disneyland prepares you for, I've always been really shy, and then I had to answer questions, you know, guests had and everything, and it really helped me come out of that a little bit, I think.
Absolutely. And I really was challenged with being courteous to people because it's like, you know, like what I said about the menu, like, really, are you that stupid that you waited in line all this time? And of course you can't say that.
Right.
So it really helped me learn to be better at that. And then that helped me in teaching because it's the same way with teaching. You can't just say whatever pops into your head. You have to be nice about it. So yeah, I do think it was a very nice first job, and I had a lot of variety and it gave me a lot of skills for later.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. We've talked to a lot of former cast members, and we hear that it's just it's like no other job. It's a special place to work, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Debbie. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. I was really looking forward to it. I enjoyed thinking about it ahead of time.
Oh, good. Yeah.
It's great to talk with you and get these memories from you.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for the invite. And I've been listening to your podcast more and more. And so I look forward to listening to more of those now that I'm in the habit of it.
Yeah, well, fun. Well, thank you. Wow, another great episode of the Sweep Spot Podcast.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was bringing back some memories. I can vaguely remember old Fantasyland and... Of course, yeah. I remember Space Place and, you know, the parades and everything like that. It's great to chat about that stuff.
Yeah, we always love talking to former cast members. And if you are one and you have some stories you'd like to tell and we haven't spoke to you yet, you know, reach out to us. We'd always love to have you on our show and hear your story. Some other things we'd like to talk about before we leave. We always like to read reviews that you leave us, and we've been doing this for years, and I don't know if we've read this one yet because
Well, I our new policy is to read the most recent review.
Regardless, well, we have three, but I don't know how far back they go. So I'm going to just read the last three, and because the third one, the first, so it's shorter, which is fine. So it says here, a magical podcast, 5 stars by Tom 111869 on March 8th, 2024.
Thank you.
Says this is a fun podcast for past stories, interviews, and current events at Disneyland. Thank you.
All right.
Awesome.
That's fine. You don't reviews don't have to be long, folks.
No, we like them all. So.
That's right.
The second one is called titled "So Darn Interesting." 5 stars by Nectar Maiden. March 21st, 2024. It says, I love the interviews with past cast members. You never know what you're going to learn about the best Disney park on earth. Lynn and Ken are genuine in their love of Disneyland, and it shows so many cool stories. Thank you.
Ah, so cool.
Yeah, thank you so much. And the last one for now says, great podcast, 5 stars by Disneyland. Dina says March 22nd, 2024. Always a great listen. Lynn and Ken have firsthand info on Disneyland past and present. Great guests too. Always a fun show. Love you, Donna. Right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, really appreciate that. If you'd like to leave a review and you haven't yet, we'd really appreciate that. It helps us out, and yeah, so we will read that if you do that, and we'd really appreciate it. So anything else, Ken, before we...
Just visit the website, thesweepspot.com. Check out the merchandise that we have. It's really good. It's, you know, any fans of Disneyland or theme parks should enjoy that stuff. Okay. Go ahead and check it out, and load up on it, because I'm sure it's going to be worth all kinds of untold sums in the future. So buy extra just to keep some, you know, stocked away for your retirement.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first 3 audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.